Before we get started with today's show, I wanted to remind you to check out the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, which is now out twice a week. Every Tuesday, Mina highlights the winners and losers from the weekend with Dominique Foxworth. Then later in the week, she's joined by different experts to preview the most intriguing games. That's the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny. Listen where you are listening to this podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Thanks for watching us on YouTube. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is that time of week where we have a guest join us, coming to us live from the Ringer. And I mean, I feel like you're just kind of everywhere, man. Wozni Lambre, what's going on, man?
I'm good, man. I can't complain. Yeah, I have multiple jobs, but, you know, that's just the Haitian in me.
So, the Haitian in you, I want to tell people about this off the top. And we're going to talk a little NFL, but then we're going to get around to talking to NBA a little bit later. And so, I know Wiles for a while, man. We catch up, you know, do count the dings, all that stuff. But in this internet world, you don't ever, like, actually know anybody's name. Like, you think you know it, but you don't know. I knew Woz. Okay, Woz is Satisfactory. And then it's time to get you booked for the podcast. And I was like, huh. And then I go, like, okay, Wozni Lambre. Is that his actual name? Or is that, like, a throw to a joke that I'm simply not getting? No, it is your actual name. I apologize on one level, but on the other, man, it's just what the game is these days.
Yo, you know what's so funny? The last time I had an internet name, and this is like around the time that I started messing with Jade and Amin and Ethan and Tom and all of them. Back when all of those guys were at ESPN, ironically, my internet name was Bobby Kennedy. That's the last time I had an internet name. That was my name on the little the webcast apparatus when you put in a screen name and you could comment. So my comments would come up as Bobby Kennedy. That's what they used to call me.
No, the thing I thought about with it was like, you are Haitian, and a Haitian name, you could sound like you are the former prime minister of France, or you could sound like you from Haiti. It could go either way.
It can go either way. And, you know, related to that Bobby Kennedy, my middle name is Fitzgerald. And I remember when I was a kid, because, like, my name, people used to just mess it up all day, every single day, which I'm sure you can relate to, Bo. And I remember I had to be, like, 7 years old, and I asked my dad, I said, couldn't you just name me something like James? And then I was like, where did you get the Fitzgerald from? And he was like, I named you after my favorite president. I was like, who's that? JFK. So, yeah, I'm named after JFK, even though my dad moved to the United States of America in 1974, which would have been 11 years after the guy got killed. So, yeah, I was just like, how is this guy your favorite president? And you were in Haiti when he presidented. But, you know, so here we are.
Well, also, who has a favorite president? Right? Is that, like he said, you are my favorite player on the Miami Dolphins? Like, that feels like something that, first of all, we ain't got but 46 presidents total.
That is a great question, Bo, but, you know, we don't want to get political.
Yes. It's a what the president of the United States means is something very different in every country in the world. That is a bit of an underrated thing. Like, I'm trying to remember which one of those former Yugoslav nations, they're really big into Bill Clinton over there. Like, he mattered a lot to what was going on with them geopolitically at the time. And I'm like, wow, something I would not have thought of.
The war in Kosovo. I remember seeing that on TV. That was like around the same time that he did that thing with that woman.
Ah, yes. I was like, that. Oh, yeah. It was a thing. But I wanted to have you all here because I've been on your pod and I listened to you and Ethan Strauss and Nate Jones talking about the Draymond thing. And it was a riveting conversation. And I assure you, the only time in my life anybody has ever said on a broadcast, it's kind of like the Holocaust, and actually landed the plane. Like, if, like, and I don't know. Like, maybe I'm giving people podcast advice that they can have. I'm not really going to try it here, right? But if you want to make sure that people listen all the way to the end of a podcast, start with, it's kind of like the Holocaust. We'll get back to that. You'll listen to every minute to see what happens when we get back to that. And it was not only not offensive, but very insightful.
Thank you. Thank you. You know what's so funny? I realized talking to Ethan, who is a Jewish guy, by the way, just saying the word Holocaust makes people uncomfortable. Like, just mentioning that it happened, that events were inspired by it, it makes people like, oh, where's he going with this? Like, is he gonna, like, you know, there's so many ways you can go with that obviously horrible event. But no, that particular thing that I mentioned on Ethan's show has stuck with me because it's so related to what we do here, and how we talk about stuff here. No matter what it is, literally, no matter what it is, that thing that I talked about on Ethan's podcast, that just stuck with me.
Yeah, no, this is, you know, because you guys were talking a lot about media stuff. I get the feeling we're going to take a meandering tour in these 45 minutes, and that's okay. Yeah. They opted in. You know what I'm saying? That's kind of how this podcast game goes. But I think you and I are in somewhat similar media situations in that we're not of this, but we're in it. And it sounds kind of weird for me to say that because I've been doing this job in various capacities for like 20 years. But there is kind of a machine. And those of us who came in more as new media kind of came in and you eventually become a part of it, right? Like you don't get to say them about the media, but for so long. But it does give you kind of a clear eyed look at just kind of how the machine works and how we make all of this stuff. I was having a talk yesterday with Rich Eisen, right? And he and I were both talking about with the Draymond story, the idea that the tape got out, right? That the video got out. And people outside of the machine can't understand why that's such a big deal to us, right? We are floored. We cannot believe that something like this ever happened, right? But it's a difference that comes in. And when you talk about media, there was a time where I would have come in and been like, why are you guys so worried about that sort of thing? Then I got in and I'm like, yo, can you believe somebody actually put that tape out?
You know, okay, so just so people understand, right? Like, I didn't go to J school at Northeastern or Columbia, and I didn't grow up thinking one day I'm going to be a broadcaster or some type of features writer or whatever. Like, I'm not of the world, so the norms and the mores of the media, they always feel new to me because, honestly, it's not related to anything we do in the outside world, in the real world. So there's that. And then there's the part where we cover sports and the NBA specifically. And I'll give you an example of why that tape getting out matters. Anytime you talk to somebody who works at a team or might work at ESPN or is an agent, you can't ask them something that may potentially be sensitive in a text. You have to call them, or they're going to send you a voice note back. Or, like, there's just a way that they treat communication as proprietary. So, like, everything is sort of understood to be kind of a secret. Everything around the culture of the sport, of the industry, is considered privileged information, which, again, I think I understood intuitively that, like, nobody wants to be screenshotted or nobody wants to be the person that was accused of leaking some sensitive information. But, like, it really comes in a sharp contrast when the Draymond thing happens, because everybody understands that, like, the things that go on in the NBA can't be made public. Like, people can't know what players are like, what owners are like, what GMs are like, what agents are like, what staffers are like, what their relationships are like. Everything is kind of, there's just this understanding that people can't know how the sausage is made. And when the Draymond thing gets out, that's why everybody has a reaction, because everybody knows that the public doesn't truly understand how pro sports work. Like, there's like kind of, yeah, this is different from my life. And I think that's what attracts us to pro sports. It's different from our jobs, our lives. But there's not a true understanding of what Draymond Green is like every single day at work. We kind of know he's a dick, kind of, from what we get to see on TV and how he talks about Kendrick Perkins on his podcast. But we don't really know how Draymond behaves every day at work with his superiors, with his colleagues, with his subordinates. And then so when a piece of it gets out, yeah, I'm shocked. Because they hold these things very close to the vest. And what I'm realizing, Bo, I know I'm droning on and on. What I'm realizing and what I've learned from this Draymond Green thing that I said on Ethan's pod, I used to think that it was BS when public figures or prominent people would say, well, we can't let the public know this. We have to protect the innocents. I used to think that was crap. And then this Draymond Green thing happened. I was like, no, the public, they can't handle the truth. They really can't.
I think what makes it so interesting for me is that if you got 15 guys on a roster, I'd say 6 or 7 of them have spent their lives being told that they're irreplaceable, right?
That's a minimum.
Yeah, it's a minimum, right? Yep. Then you got 5 other guys who didn't need nobody to tell them that they are irreplaceable, even though they can probably be replaced, right? Mm-hmm. And then you got a couple from the mud. I done played in them consonant countries who recognize all the scrapping and everything that they have to do to like keep it together and make it happen. But there is no other world where everybody has a legitimate reason to believe that the sun shines and he rises and sets right on their asses. Like, I understand why every single one of them thinks that some grown person been able to make money off of them all the way up, right? And so you believe that there's a certain way that you can kick it and things that you can get away with. What makes Draymond so interesting is that he's not one of those guys, right? Yeah. Like, he's the dude that came up chubby. He's the one that went to Michigan State and turned himself into a player. And I would say is getting a higher return on his talent than any player in the NBA. Nobody has done more with what they have in the NBA than Draymond. And so his thing wound up being less about the sort of entitlement that we think about than it's slipping away from me, and I see it every single day. Like, they can say that this wasn't about the money. It might not have been about the money that day, but I don't think there's a single... what day is there that he going to pull up to work and it ain't about the money? What day have you ever pulled up to your job and it wasn't about the money?
So I'll say this about Draymond too. And people around the Warriors will tell you this. He is a master operator in understanding who matters. He understands he has to grease the wheels with Lacob. He understands he has to grease the wheels with Bob Myers. He understands that he needs to make Steph Curry his best friend. It's my belief that the clutch thing is Draymond understanding these are people with influence and I need to be on good terms with them, right? Like LeBron and Maverick and all of them. He understands, oh, I want to get in media. Inside. I got to get in good with the inside guys. This is who I'm going to be with to make sure I get a prominent job in media. He's extremely self-aware when it comes to who has the status, who has the power, and who doesn't. Like, ask anybody who works in or around the Golden State Warriors situation since Draymond Green has been there. He treats Steph like he is the crown prince. This is the guy whose coat I need to hold. Mm-hmm. This is the guy who I need to make sure everybody knows he's my guy and I'm his guy. People ask, like, what if he would have did that to Steph? That could never, ever, ever happen. Draymond is acutely aware of his own status. And that's why when you say he could feel it slipping, I believe that. Because he's acutely aware of who has the status and why he needs to cozy up to them. It's not that Draymond Green should get an extension this offseason, right? Like the way that he went to the team and asked for one. It's his understanding that, like, if I'm somebody who matters within this organization, people are going to feel like I should be taken care of. Whether it should or needs to or not, if I have status, everybody who matters around here is going to be like, no. Draymond, he's one of the guys. He's one of the core, as the Yankees used to call Mariano, Jeter, yeah. Pettit, and them, the core four. He's one of the core four. Yeah, we got it. And they was like, nah. You got a deal that I think is like 2 years still. Nah, you good. And then when he sees the way they're like, no, we don't even dictate terms to Jordan Poole. We got to see what the market sets for Jordan Poole. If you're a guy who's been there for as long as he's been and you've been a part of instrumental to, it's easy for people to forget, Bo, and you and I have been watching the NBA long enough to still understand this. The Warriors have not mattered for 30 years. Then Steph, Draymond, and Klay Thompson showed up and everything changed. So if you're Draymond and you were part of that, changing everything that this franchise is known for, making it so that, Bo, it's a franchise that could move from Oakland to San Francisco, right. Legitimately, I can understand why he would feel like he, you know, he deserves some stuff, but sports is a cruel, cruel world, man.
Unless you are a real superstar caliber player like Steph Curry, they not going to pay you for what you did. They're going to pay you for what you're going to do, because that's how contracts work. That check is being paid in real time for what you're actually going to provide. With Steph worth so much money that, cool, you got it. Here's 4 years, $200 million. I don't know what that deal going to look like in 4 years, by the way. But you say, hey, okay, we're going to do this. You're Steph Curry. Unfortunately, you are Draymond Green and someone who's going to learn this also. You are Klay Thompson. And it's going to be hard for both of them when they realize, like, thanks for the memories, dog. But, you know, Warriors going to look at Klay and be like, dog, we maxed you out on a bum wheel. Say thank you.
Yeah, and if you've listened to... Just pay attention to what Lacob says publicly. He's not sentimental about what they've accomplished. He has a CEO's mindset, a growth mentality. Oh, we won? We got to keep winning.
Yes.
we have to expand the winning. We're not going to be content with the amount of winning that we have, even if it's fed all of our families for generations. No, winning has to go more, bigger. We have to grow the pie, as they say, Bo. Man, people got to go back and remember before Steph signed the $200 million deal, Lakeup was talking crazy in the press. I don't know. Steph might be worth the max. I don't know. Is he? We got to see. We'll cross that bridge when we get there. Go look back at what Lakeup was saying about Steph Curry. Wardell Curry was talking greasy about that dude until ultimately everybody understood when it was time to put pen to paper, when Steph could legitimately be like, guys, I have like 90 other offers. I don't have to be here to get this money. Everybody was like, no, Steph, yeah, here's the money. But just go look back at the statements that Lakeup, the guy who ultimately decides who gets the money and who doesn't, what he was saying about Steph. So... Think about who Draymond Green is and what he applies to Draymond Green.
Hold on. The dude who stood on the stage after a championship and gave props to the front office for all those good deals they signed, a.k.a. all these underpaid players. Like, I have to say this for Joe Lacob, right? Because my introduction to Joe Lacob was what I still consider to be, for Joe Lacob, a terrible look, which is him sitting front row during the 2014 NBA playoffs, looking at Mark Jackson like he just wanted to take off on him at any moment, right? Like, that thing had gotten so toxic. And then they fired him. And to your point about them being so bad, the idea that the Warriors were firing a 50-win coach seemed absurd, right?
Yeah.
Like, everybody be like, oh, man, I thought if they got a better coach, they could go somewhere. But nobody thought they were going to go where they were, right? Mm-hmm. And so Joe Lacob then says, I'm hiring Steve Kerr. Well, how'd you get to know Steve Kerr? Playing golf. Bruh, I'm looking at all of this like, and this is why in my travels, I don't remember exactly what I said in 2014, but I have gotten to the, you have to understand what it looks like, as opposed to look at these white folks. Like you gotta be, and the reason you gotta be careful is you might look up 8 years and four rings later, right? Yeah. Like, I don't know if Joe Lacob knew that that was what it was, but he was like, I'm willing to do this, I'm willing to do that, I'm willing to do all of this, and this cat wouldn't take us up on it. And I'm like, yeah, whatever you say, dog. Oh, well, you know what? Maybe Joe Lacob, you might be on to something. Problem is, he be talking crazy, right? Yeah. But not the kind of crazy that'll get you fired or lose your team or nothing. Just like, why did you say that?
He's of that Silicon Valley mindset. And you guys can look up what those guys believe and think about labor, think about what they consider to be winning. I don't need to get into it on here, but he's completely of that culture, right? And so he applies that sensibility to this team. And again, just again, I want to remind people, they were trying to front on Stephen Curry before he got his deal. So Draymond Green, I don't even want to know what Lacob said to Rich Paul and them when they tried to be like, hey, yo, let's re-up. You know, we just did the championship. We know Draymond had a shaky finals to start, but the last three games, the guy was excellent. He's part of what makes this team special. Yeah, let's take it. Nah, you good. You got 2 years. Yeah, talk to me in 2 years.
We'll say, hey, that bridge you're talking about, we haven't crossed it. Hey, let me ask you a what if, because I kind of hate that this story happened to the Warriors. What if it happened with the Nets?
Oh, my God.
Yo, like, nobody, the Nets needed to thank Robert Sarver and Ime Udoka so much for making their media day easy. And now, somehow, they don't even look like the Chemistry Chaos All-Stars anymore because this Draymond thing happened. But we are still going to get this Nets season. And have you looked at their early schedule? They could very easily start like 3-4, and it could get hilarious real quick over there.
It's already hilarious. I watched the TikTok yesterday where they did some event at a park somewhere in the New York area, and Ben Simmons took a jump shot and airballed it in the background of the video. It was just so cringe, and like, that is looming over everything that they do. All of the chaos around Ben Simmons. But what I will say about Nets coverage, Bo, is that they're one of the rare teams that's a national team but not a correct local team.
Correct.
In that I care about the Nets. And obviously I'm a New York City guy, but that's not why I care about it. I just think they're a fascinating NBA story. But on the ground, nobody gives a damn. Like, it would be crazy. Like, this would be on every single WFAN. Of course, well, MSG would ignore it because,
yes,
MSG. But like, everybody in at the Post, at the Daily News, everybody would be covering what's happening in and around the Nets in a way, if it was the Knicks. And because it's the Nets, it's just us. People who understand the NBA produces incredible stories no matter what are like, yo, this Nets thing is crazy. But on the ground, I think it lessens the effect of how ridiculous that's it. He asked Steve, he wanted Steve Kerr to get fired.
Yes. Yes. And now they just kicking it.
Like, the GM, out of here. He told the owner, like, yo, get me to some better place. Like, the coach, the guy who's coaching this team, he asked to be fired publicly. They made that public.
Yes.
This isn't rumors or conjectures. Like, no, I did. Yo, I wanted them out.
And this is, again, the NBA being different because of the irreplaceability factor. Because, look, once you ask for your boss to be replaced, one of y'all is going to be replaced. Yeah. Generally speaking, like and if nothing else, that person will not be your boss, right? Maybe you still work there. Maybe you don't. But that person will not be your boss. See, I think there's an interesting thing about them with the local national part in living here now, I guess, for 5 years and change. What's different about the Nets than, say, the Mets, who I think are probably the best comparison, you know, in the New York market. If the Mets are rolling.
Oh, my God.
New York City, not the whole city, right? Like, Yankees fans aren't going to stop being Yankees fans. Yeah. But New York City will be about the Mets. Like, as the Mets got this thing rolling this year, you see that, and there's the emotion and there's the attachment that comes to it. I don't know if the Nets could pull that off if they went 82-0. I'm not convinced of that. So the only time people going to show up for the Nets in the city is basically like on FAN is, I hate the NBA guy, letting you know that he hates the NBA. And the Nets are the walking embodiment of why those people hate the NBA, while also being the embodiment of why people like me and you love the NBA.
Yes.
Right? Like Kyrie Irving, as frustrating and ridiculous as I find him to be. Oh, man, this is going to be hilarious this year, because it could be either Kyrie on a contract year or Kyrie with nothing to lose, because none of us know what Kyrie Irving thinks is important. This could go in either direction. Kevin Durant, the most player I can think of, just like on so many looks, look at it, be like, hadn't thought about it that way. Like, he makes you rethink what stardom is, what basketball is, what a seven footer is, like all of this, without like being the most compelling personality himself. But
he's not a person. You know the thing about KD? He's not a personality, but he's a very thoughtful guy.
Yes.
He is so thoughtful. He really spends time thinking about his own existence and what the game means. Like, he is a really thoughtful person.
Yeah.
If not, again, like you said, the most compelling personality. Like, I don't know that I want to read a book about Kevin Durant. But listening, watching him perform NBA stardom is interesting to me, because he does it in a way that's not like anybody I've ever seen before.
Right.
And of course, there's the part of his game that is just, you know, magnetic and electric. And then, you know, like Kyrie, man, I'll just say this, as somebody who grew up in New York City, has a lot of family from New Jersey. There's just a weird relationship that we have with New Jersey.
I was about to say, it's about to be Jersey slander. Jersey slander all the way.
Kyrie, because I feel like there's two kinds of New Jersey guys. There are guys who are from places like Newark and Elizabeth and, you know, some of these different, and Patterson, which is what Lean On Me is based on. There are those Jersey guys, black people. And then there's suburban Jersey people. Y'all can figure out which one Kyrie is a part of. And so everything he does, I view through that lens of that specific kind of New Jersey black person.
Well, I also think that there are levels on which Kyrie is very, very difficult for white people to understand, because they haven't met one of these before. And have met zillions of these before. Like I say, once I saw the Ankh earring, I was like, oh, there's no turning back. Like, it's not an Ankh tattoo. It's not on a chain. It is an earring. I think it was two of them. And like, at that moment, that's where I was like, oh, this guy is a very particular archetype that he is on.
So Bo, I'm so happy I could talk to you about this. He's hitting on two arrogances that don't always come together that I think is special. He's doing the, you know, the Ankh earring, the, and let's call it enlightenment stuff. Yeah. I'm enlightened. I know things that, or I think I know things that most people don't know. But he's combining that with the arrogance that come with white people have been calling you articulate your whole life and you believe them.
Yes.
He's combining those two things. And for people to understand, because like when I was a kid, like, my white teachers thought I was smart, and, you know, they wanted to get me to Regis, Pablo's high school, by the way, which for people who don't know, is like a school that literally breeds you for the Ivy League, right? Like, white people were like, oh my God, he knows these words. And my mom was convinced that I was going to become like a rocket scientist or some crazy, like, oh, this kid's a genius. Clearly these white people think he's smart. It was just that I knew words very early. That's literally it. Like, I'm trash at science. I was pretty good at math, whatever. But I know what it's like to have that happen, where people are telling you that you're gifted, that you're this, that you're that. But I never really felt that way myself inside. I never felt special. So this just felt like people talking. I think Kyrie has had that happen to him his whole life. People have been telling him he's gifted and he's special, and he really believes it.
No.
He truly feels it. And now he's doing this, you know, black people are the first Israelites. And it's like, yo, this is the arrogance that comes with those two things. Like, I don't think people understand, you know, what's going on. And the part about being an NBA player, again, that people, this ain't like your job. Like, there's not a lot of people at your job who, since they were basically 11, people understood that they could get money out of making this guy feel good.
Yes.
There was money in it. You know, not just like, oh, I like being around him. Oh, like he, you know, girls like to be here, or this likes to be here, or some of these sort of ancillary benefits of being an NBA star. Like, I could get money out of making this guy feel good.
Yeah.
And Kyrie is all of that. All of the, like, the reason why you can't understand what he's saying is because that's what he's been surrounded by his whole life. Just people telling him, yo, don't stink, Kyrie. You are special. You're not like these others.
Mm-hmm.
You're special.
And now he's leaned all the way into a particular wing of the black, which makes it interesting. Because I got two resentments on Kyrie, right? Mm. Both personal, I admit, right? One is I don't deal well with people. Look, if you go tell me you're smarter than me, you better be right. That's all I'm saying. Like, I readily acknowledge. Like, if you are right, and there are plenty of people who are, right? If you are right, we cool.
Yeah.
If we are not, I have been told that I was pretty damn special myself, and I feel like I've shown and proved. Like, you, and I feel like I'm not trying to flex on y'all about it in a sense of comparative. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's one. Number two, I just can't believe that hairline was wasted on that mother. like when every time I look up, and I see him, right? Like, when I see my man Michael Smith and he got his hairline, maybe it's all good, man. Mike, a great dude. You know what I mean? Couldn't happen to a better guy. I'm all on board with that. I look at Kyrie and I see that hairline. I'm like, what kind of bull is this?
Resentment.
It is full on resentment. I just can't figure out how. Yeah, that bothers me. But before we get out of here, I asked you about this before we got off.
Hold on. Before you go, I do want to say this last thing about Kyrie, just because he does have, like, the most... Have you encountered the Kyrie people on the internet?
I avoid.
They're kind of crazy. I will say this. I've talked to multiple people who have worked with Kyrie closely, and they all are believers. Like, people who... There's people who come in close contact with Kyrie who think the world of him. So I'll say that for him. You know, like, there are true
believers. That's an important point.
You know, like, people really love the guy. Like, whatever. I'm not close to it. I see all the things that he does. You know, I tell people all the time, like, well, if Kyrie's so articulate, how come we never understand what he's talking about? like, whatever, but people do. There are people who've been close to him, were close to him, and truly believe in the guy. And so that's all I'll say about
that. Yeah, he got a Tupac quality to him in the sense that he is able to connect his intentions. He can connect his intentions with people. And I think that a certain class of people who will be older than him are kind of rooting for him, right? Like, it's like, oh man, he's just figured it out. Because he means well, all of that stuff, right? Like,
I don't have time for it, though.
Yeah. Like, I'm like, look, you 30 now. You know what I'm saying? Like, I can't do this. But I found out you Jets fan.
Yes.
I didn't realize till I got to New York just how many of y'all there were. Like, the class dynamics and everything else that come with Jets fandom. But I was talking to Rich Eisen yesterday. Like I said, man, he had some optimism about the Jets. I was hoping that you would be in the same place.
I'm not that Jets guy. I'm not that Jets guy. I lived through Glenn Foley. Like, people, NFL fans don't know who Glenn Foley is. He was, like, literally out of training camp, the New York Jets starting quarterback, which was an absurdity at the time. And he wasn't really that bad, to be honest. I come out of Neil O'Donnell. I come out of, there was once a Jets game where the two active quarterbacks got hurt, and Tom Tupa, the punter, had to play quarterback. I come out of the butt fumble. I come out of that. I come out of, by the way, why am I a Jets fan? Keyshawn Johnson. When he got drafted, he was just the most brash, confident. I had never really encountered an athlete like Keyshawn Johnson before. Mm-hmm. I was really young and really impressionable. After his rookie year, he put out a book called Just Give Me the Damn Ball, in which he called Wayne Corbett the Jets mascot. Wayne Corbett was his teammate.
Yes.
He was making a racial commentary, a class commentary in his book 1 year after being drafted. Like, I was like, this, I have to root for this. And it was Bill Parcells, and it was all of that. And, you know, that Keyshawn Johnson cursed me to be a Jets fan, but I've done this long enough to know, do not get excited about the Jets. Don't do it. Don't do it. Y'all better. The Jets got to get to four, like 6-2. Mm-hmm. You know, they got to get to 7-2. It's like, okay, this is a real team. They've played 9 NFL games. And this is a real team. I don't know. I'm not doing this. Zach Wilson. I remember, yo. Mina is one of the people whose NFL commentary I pay attention to. And I remember Mina was, well, first of all, Mina bigged up our last two quarterbacks. Sam mm-hmm. Darnold, Mina was like, yes. Mina got me hyped because she's a trusted source. I know she does the work. I know she cares about the NFL. She's enthusiastic about it. Mina's like, nah, I like Sam Darnold. He got the tools. Like, this guy could, he could probably do something. I was like, Mina, are you sure? Nah, I really like the kid. He turned into Sam Darnold. A lot of people enthusiastic about this Zach Wilson kid. And I was like, I'm not doing it. He got to show and prove. Like BYU, all that. I can't do it. I'm not that Jets fan. I'm eternally pessimistic. I've just been beaten down so badly before. I just can't. And then, Bo, watching other teams acquire great quarterbacks and just knowing that will never happen for the New York Jets. Like, I watched Josh Allen, and I'm like, that would just never happen to the Jets. We will never draft Josh Allen. We will never, ever have a guy who's just like, yo, this guy can carry us through thick and thin. This guy can make stuff happen. I just know we won't ever achieve that. And so I don't even let myself get excited. I know that we've drafted very well. I don't go out of my way to watch Jets games. I'm not doing the NFL Sunday ticket mm-hmm. to watch the Jets. I see, like, there's good young talent and all of that, but I'm perpetually in a wait and see. I'm not one of these Jets people. I can't. The best Jets quarterback of my life, the best Jets quarterback season of my life is Vinny Testaverde.
Yeah.
When we went 12-4, we lost to the Broncos, eventual Super Bowl champs. And the best quarterback is Chad Pennington.
Mm-hmm.
Respect, Chad, like, respect. You are a respectable NFL quarterback. You are by far the best Jet quarterback of my life. It's not, there's no competition, bro. Like, there's no, like, oh, well, what about those Ray Lucas season? No, like, it's Chad Noodle Arm Pennington. That's what we're dealing with as Jets fans.
You know, that's funny because you're in the opposite place. I guess the Giants, they got those Super Bowls to lean back on because they barely win in these games. And they treat that 4-1 like it's supposed to be a trophy that come with it. They getting hype about Daniel Jones like they can't actually see. But let me tell you a funny Giants story that just happened. So their punter, Jamie Gillian, you see, they went over there to London for the game. And he's Scottish and he had some passport issue and now he can't come back. And that's got to be disappointing. He stuck over there. But do you know the story on this dude?
No, I do not.
They call him the Scottish Hammer. And like he's averaging like 50 yards a punt or something like that. And I guess he did that thing where he found out about a college and he decided to come and he didn't research it that tough before he did so. And that college is the University of Arkansas at Pine Bluff.
No.
And I don't know how familiar you are with the University of Arkansas at Pine Bluff and HBCU, the Arkansas HBCU, the Arkansas HBCU.
Oh, God.
The Arkansas HBCU.
Oh, my God.
And it is in Pine Bluff, which for Arkansas is the Camden, New Jersey of Arkansas, the Kinston, North Carolina of Arkansas, the Youngstown, Ohio of Arkansas. You guys who know what I'm talking about, know what I'm talking about.
Of when I Arkansas.
Bring, of Arkansas. Of Arkansas. And jeez. I bring all that up to say, just can you imagine getting off the plane, getting in the car, and you are learning about America through the lens of Arkansas, through the lens of Pine Bluff, Arkansas, through the lens of the University of Arkansas at Pine Bluff. Why did nobody start running the camera with him immediately? I want to know the slang that he picked up. I want to know the evolution of his accent. I want to know the girls he dated in college. I want to know all of it, right? Like, you live in California. Jesus. So I could tell you this and you'll relate to it. So when I moved to California for graduate school now 20-something years ago, I thought I was going to L.A. It was Southern California, and I'm from Houston with like a sprawling metro area, and it's kind of it's all Houston, right? Yeah. I thought I was going to L.A. I landed in Ontario, but I'm not thinking much about that. L.A. got a bunch of airports. Yeah. I looked up in the sky, and I was like, huh, it's not what I thought L.A. would be like. I got to where I was going, which was Claremont. And brother, that was not L.A.
Oh, my God.
All right. It's like if you hear about Florida and you think, oh, I'm going to Miami. No, 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 no. There's really only one of those. You're going to Florida. So I don't know what concept this man had in his mind of America. Maybe he thought it was New York. Maybe he thought it was D.C. Maybe he thought it was Los Angeles. Maybe he thought it was Miami. But what he got was the real America. Pine Bluff, Arkansas.
There is like, you know, as a New York City slicker, whatever, I've done enough traveling. Like my people, like my brother and my sister both live in GA now. They live in like the suburbs of Atlanta, if you can even call Gwinnett County that. It's like an exurb at this point.
Yes.
So you kind of get a better understanding of the South. And then, you know, you grow up. And you pay attention to stuff like politics and this, and you get a better understanding of a place like Arkansas and its relevance to, you know, the American concept. And then it's like, no, like Arkansas is like, let's face it, it's f***ed up.
Yeah.
Right? It's f***ed up. And that's before we get to like Little Rock is f***ed. And Little Rock is the capital. It's like the major metropolitan or what counts a metropolitan over there. Little Rock is up. So if you're going to tell me they sent this man to the up part of Arkansas, like that is by degrees more up than Little Rock, Arkansas. And this guy is from Scotland.
Yes.
That's not a movie. That is a Ken Burns documentary.
I bet he had a ball though. Tell you this right now. I bet he had a ball. Like, I want to know what homecoming was like for the first time with him. All of this. Like, I just feel like the NFL press corps has really let us down because ain't seen this story yet. I would love to see it. Also, I hope he get back home. Like, I don't think it's no Brittany Griner situation, but I do.
Nah, he gonna get back. I'm just imagining so much chitlins and gold teeth.
Yeah.
And twerking. Not the twerking, not Miley Cyrus twerking, y'all.
No.
Twerking.
Also, I can only imagine the wildly insensitive questions that he received about his home from the locals. Like, we're capable of that too, right? I would love to know what kind of things where he's like, you know, we are people, you know what I mean? Like
the cultural exchange, man. I did not know about this dude. I'm interested in looking this up because that is the kind of thing that, like, yeah, people just can't understand because we do. I think I always say like our best export at this point, like the only thing that we do sell pretty well now is culture, movies, music, whatever, TV shows, like that travels well outside of this country, that stuff that we make here. And so you can get a certain perception of America if that's all you're consuming of America,
yes.
Right? Like if you're just like, nah, I've seen, you know, The Sopranos. I've seen Top Gun. Like, I got a pretty good handle on America. And then you go to Arkansas where, oh, Lord.
Nah, man, there's like five different Americas. Like, it's just hard. I always talk a joke about two Americas. But, like, when you think about it,
yeah,
a six-hour flight, you can do a six-hour flight in the United States and mm-hmm. still be, I mean, you can do a 12-hour flight and still be in the United yeah. States if you want to count, like, Hawaii and stuff. But yeah. continental U.S., you can do a six-hour flight and still be in America. You do a six-hour flight in Europe, you done hopped over how many different countries, yeah. how many different steezes, how many everything. Don't yeah. forget, we took a whole lot of this from other people, right? Yeah. So they had some stuff that was going on before we even showed up and put all this concrete down and everything else. Like, America can mean so many things. And my man, why would you even think there were black colleges? It's the 21st century after yeah. all. Like, oh like why would you
the HBCU
imagine?
HBCU of it all is just... That is a fascinating just story, bro. Cause yeah.
And shout out to him, by the way, right?
Yeah,
you still got enough white folks in America that won't go north of 110th Street. Like, oh good, like we have to acknowledge doing 4 years of that, not everybody would.
I wouldn't. I'll tell you that right now. Like, bruh, I would have figured something else out. But I guess when you're a punter, it's not like you can just hit the transfer portal and be like, does anybody need the services of a punter?
Oh, no, but the thing is, especially with the way he was punting, he could have. I think he got there and liked to get down. He was kind of like, yo, I've never had food that was seasoned like this before. You know what I'm saying? Like, took him a little trip to Dallas, probably. Had a good time. It ain't that far away. You know, go check out a little St. Louis.
Have you ever spent any time in Arkansas, Bo?
A little, but not a lot. I've made it through there. It is hard scrabble. Look, the thing about Arkansas is it ain't even really close to nothing. And if you need to know, if you talk to somebody from Memphis, Tennessee about West Memphis, Arkansas, and what you thought was the country's person you had ever met is telling you about how you don't know country till you get to West Memphis, Arkansas.
Oh God.
That's the indication that you need. Like, that's the hint that you're getting here, man. It is, like I say, it's not close to anything. That's the hardest thing.
It's not close to New Orleans. It's not close to some other major, you know, thing that's happening in that region. And you know, sometimes, like, I'm getting older, I'm shedding my coastal elitism.
Thank you.
And my mentality about being like, you know, there's certain that I don't need to participate in, but blah, blah, blah. But, like, I'm never going to Mississippi. I'm just not.
No. You should go.
Should I?
You should go. Everybody needs to take a trip to Mississippi because you kind of got to see it. Like, there's a level, like, it's not, like, it ain't as terrible as people make it out to be, per se. And there are, you know, places and pockets you can get to that are pretty cool. And, like, the spots that are right around Memphis ain't so bad necessarily. But no, everybody need to see the what they call that Deep South. Everybody need to get their eyeballs on it, because let me tell you what'll make a lot more sense to you. Football. Everything about the culture of football will make more sense to you once you go see. Like, when cats is talking about they getting it from the mud, ain't necessarily outside. The mud might be the flow in the crib. Like, it's a different animal.
That
man.
Is crazy to think that like, and that's why I'm just like, you know, you hear stuff like, well, it's, you know, it's the poorest state in the union, right? There are things like, the most impoverished place in New York is like East New York in New York City, you know, where it's like kind of bad. Brownsville's like pretty bad. You know what I'm saying? Like, in the summertime, you might see a baby with a diaper on with no parent around just walking down the street in Brownsville. Like, that's a thing that might happen. And that's like as bad as it gets in New York City. But, like, you can't compare poverty in New York City to poverty in other places in our country. Yeah. Like, it's just...
The difference with the New York poverty that is striking to me as somebody from the South who am more familiar with the poverty that you're talking about is the poverty being vertical. You know what I mean? Right. Like, stacked all on top of each other and all, like, packed close tight in that way. Basically, man, the real metric is any place you go, how many people ain't got no shirts on? And then it steps up to how many people just have on undershirts, and then how many people simply have white t-shirts. You can know a lot about what a whole place is. But when you get out there, like, you get out there driving the streets in New Orleans, you see them boys with no shirts on and a whole bunch of tattoos you can barely read. Like, it's just like, hey, yeah. Okay. Like, this is the stack up that you wind up having. But no, I'm a defender of the dignity of the folks down there. Cause, you know, hey man, they us, you know. But I also feel like in line with that, what you say though is something that Haitians in Miami will often say about, like, look, I hear what you're saying about this U.S. poverty. Really, I promise. I hear what you talk about. But I'm not moved.
It's by degrees worse. And I've been to Haiti. You know what I'm saying? So it's not even, it's just like, what time would I have off? Or like, what would I be doing that would take me to, you know, rural Mississippi? Like, what? Like,
yeah, it's not coming up. You're right. That's fair.
You know what I mean? Like, I got off from work. I have some money to spend to take me out of my city and my place of comfort. You know, normally you might want to spend some time with some loved ones, whether it be a mate or just people in your family that you love. Like, what's going to take me to Mississippi?
I don't have a counter argument.
Or Arkansas. Like, I don't think I'm ever going to see America's deep south. Like, I don't.
Yeah, you'd have to consciously do it.
I'd have to do it.
And see, I got that kind of daddy. You need to see what the man has wrought. You need to see what they done did it to us. And Bo, by the way, he was right.
Bo, as you know, I'm a huge fan of your show. I love it. It's my favorite.
I appreciate it.
Anytime y'all come up on my app, I'm gonna watch. And like, your dad is sort of a character of your show, right? Just like how you impress upon people, like, this guy left an impression on you. Like, your dad, you're your dad's son. Not to say you're not your mom's son too, but like, your dad has had an influence on the person you've become.
Yeah.
Have you ever thought about bringing your dad on your show?
Yeah, no, he's not as great with cameras and microphones. Like, it kind of locks him up. Like, we can't get the best. You got to get the secret, the hidden microphone on my pops. And that's where you get the best. But I will tell you this. This is the most telling thing about my father. It was an interview I found online that he had done. And I wrap with this. And this is what I realized. Like, sometimes you need people to see things to keep you humble and make you realize that everybody on Twitter think they about the revolution. You know what I mean? And
get me started,
man. Yeah, and so my dad was expelled from college for participating in sit-ins at Southern University in the early 60s. And he was asked what he learned from it. And he said, yeah, you know, what I learned is that you can't really trust, like, the black people who are in power. And really, the argument was not a judgment of the black people. It was just a recognition of how much power they
have. How power works, yeah.
Right. And actually, but what he said was, it took him a long time to get over it, because he said, look, I grew up in a situation and I believed, and I had been raised to believe, that you do what you do and the consequences are what the consequences are. And he was like, and I grew up in times where things were legitimately dire. But for his pops, it's like, yo, if they go come shoot up the house over this, then I guess they just go come shoot up the house now, aren't they? And that's just what you do. I am not that gangster, sir. Right? Like, I think, you know, like, as it's gone, you know, you learn, some things get tempered. You know what I mean? You figure out that there's different things. You're a family man. You got other people to look out for, or whatever it is. But I read stuff that my pops had said and did, and I was just like, oh, okay. All you cats on the net need to fall back. I can introduce you to some gangsters. You know what I'm saying? Like, I can introduce you, not the gangsters that's robbing you on the street, the gangsters that were fighting the federal government, the state government, the local government. Yeah. I can introduce you to them. And man, they are so much harder than any of us. Any of us. Like that's the thing. And that's where I learned. So, like, people are like, yo, how do you feel good about, you know, you say what you think or what you feel on here. I'm like, oh, baby, this is nothing.
Come on.
Like, you really believe that what I'm out here doing is that noteworthy? Like, I'm not saying that you a sucker, but I'm just saying that, like, I ain't it. And I got no problem telling you that I ain't it. Because I synced it, dog. I synced it.
Yeah, just being a black person who means what you say is like a threatening act to some people. And it's just like, man, these brothers back in the days, man, these guys were literally willing to die about some I don't know what I'm willing to die about, you know, Kyrie Irving takes. I just don't think so.
No, about it. Not that people haven't been willing to kill us over. I'm just not willing to die for. But man, that's Big Waz. My man, I'm glad we got you onto the show. I don't know how I waited so long to get. Oh, I know how it was. is that I typically don't trouble you West Coasters. So I appreciate you waking up, getting in and making this happen, man. Tell the people where they can find you.
Yeah, just check out theringer.com. Check out our NBA coverage, Weekends with Wise on the podcast network, group chat with my man Justin Verrier and Rob Mahoney. And yeah, just follow me, Big Wise, on Twitter, Instagram. I generally post what I'm doing. I do other stuff, but you know, we don't want to poison the minds. We don't want to propagandize the minds on these ESPN airwaves, Bobani. But yeah, just follow me on Twitter.
All right, man. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. Thanks for joining us on YouTube. We do this 3 times a week. Dan Stanjic and Adi Khan handling everything today behind the scenes. Thank you, gentlemen. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars, I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.